I hate preaching on Romans. I'll lay that out right to begin with. So whenever it used to come up in the Revised Common Lectionary, I almost always chose one of the other readings to focus on, the Gospel or the Old Testament or the Psalm or something. One thing that I do like, however, and kind of don't like about the Narrative Lectionary, which we've been following here for a few years now, is that it won't let me do that. It doesn't give me an out, doesn't give me an alternative passage that I can be like, oh, that one's difficult, let's go to that one. Unfortunately, I'm away for the next couple of Sundays.
Reader two,
him sing next week,
Abby.
And Pride Sunday, joint service with Hope the week after. So I only have to do this once. I only have to preach on Romans once, so I kind of get out of it. And that's actually too bad. Because for all its dry theological denseness,
the creative path.
You would be hard-pressed to find a letter that has had such a profound impact on the course of human history. Though it's hard to rank such things without sounding like internet clickbait,
you gonna help?
Top 10 most influential books in the Bible sounds like the worst BuzzFeed article ever. Okay. An argument could be made for Romans to be right at or near the top. Wars have been fought over this book. More than any other book, Protestantism has derived from the pages of Romans. And with it, all the conflict of interpretation of the Christ event that came with it. So just think about that for a second. Wars have been started over interpretations of the Christ event. Romans is an important book, and we would be well served by exploring it. Paul is writing to convince the Roman Christians to support him. He states that after he visits Rome, he wants to go on to Spain. He expresses his hope to be, quote, sent on by the Romans once he has enjoyed their company for a while. He wants them to support him as he goes to the western ends of the Roman Empire, to use Rome as a home base to have their financial backing and their moral support to continue his evangelizing mission. But Paul has a problem. The Christians in Rome don't know him. In all his other letters he writes to churches and people that he knew, I'm pretty sure that all the other churches he wrote to are ones that he established. He's never been to Rome, much less founded a church there. But that's only part of the problem, because they don't know him, but they know of him. New Testament scholar Bart Ehrman points out many of the issues Paul is writing about in Romans are ones that could raise suspicions amongst the early Christian community, specifically those dealing with his law-free gospel, whatever that meant. And his style of writing is in the form of a diatribe. Ask a question, give an answer. Any argument, any suspicion, any questions that have been directed towards Paul, he can raise and then refute in the next sentence. This letter, it sounds less like an explanation of his theology and more like a defense of those parts of it others have opposed in the past. So that's the story of Romans. Paul has something he wants to do, something he wants to invite the Romans to do. Paul wants to go to Rome to get their support for a missionary journey to Spain, but he knows, or at least assumes, that word of him has already reached their ears. And from his experience, when word of him reaches other ears, it's usually antagonistic, criticizing, mischaracterizing his interpretation of the gospel or him personally. He's been the subject of ridicule, gossip, accusation, you name it, and often when he's not there. He wrote the whole letter to the Galatians because of this. I hear that after I left, someone has been telling you things about me. Well, let me tell you what I think about that. This clash of conflicting teachings and teachers lies within many of Paul's letters, and Romans is probably no different. Paul is worried that the Christians of Rome will have only heard one side of the story. And so he offers another. That's Romans. A man trying to explain something that is so important to him, something that is so beautiful, so life-changing, but has been the subject of so much misrepresentation and derision. And he wants to share it because it's meant so much to him. And he wants to share it so that they'll support him. And he wants to share it so that it will spread. This trouble is kind of like our church these days. In a secular world, we are often mischaracterized by people's perceptions of Christians. This is an old trope that I won't delve into, but I think it's become part of the mainline Protestant psyche. We worry that we are mischaracterized as being like them. We carry that with us a lot. When I'm writing a sermon, I usually go out for part of my writing, get out of my office, I go for a walk, I talk to myself, I talk it through and through and through, and then I sit down and I doodle and I write and I have flow charts on my little scrap piece of paper, and it's kind of a mess and all over the place. And so this week I had things written like substitutionary atonement theory and salvation through faith and things like that. And below that, I've got, you know, question marks and all sorts of things on it. So it's all over the place with these big Christian words, which carry a lot of baggage with them, depending on how you read them. And when the server came over to ask me what I wanted, if I wanted anything else, I replied with my arm covering up everything that I'd written, just leaning over, putting my hand over the printout of where it said Romans and the underlining, and I ordered what I wanted to order. Because deep down inside, I was kind of worried that they would see this crazy guy sitting there and not just reading the Bible, but writing theories around substitutionary atonement and God knows what else. And they'd look at me differently and they'd think, okay, this guy's pretty intense. Let's just, you know, let him have his food and be on his way. Now, whether or not it actually does, we assume our faith comes with some preconceived baggage. And I think it does to a point. And this is just like Paul. He assumes that the people of Rome will make a judgment call on him, on who he is, on what he's about. People in our world have preconceived notions. They make judgment calls on who Christians are and on what Christians are about. That's just how it is. But how Paul responds to that is so different from how we often do, or how I certainly do. He writes, "I am not ashamed of the gospel. If you don't like it, then you haven't been hearing it right, and I'm going to try to help you hear it right." The closest we get to that is, if you don't like it, don't worry, I'm not like them. That's sort of the mainline Protestant answer to Paul. But Paul dives right in. This is who I am. This is what I believe, and I think I can help you, and I think it can help the world. The gospel that Paul is talking about, the good news, is that salvation comes to those who trust that God could love them. He's got more details than that, but that's it. Pretty roughly. He sees it in the life, death, and resurrection of Christ, but this is it. Salvation is for those who live as though God loves them, and those who understand that God would give anything for them. And then when they understand that, people start to live a little bit differently. That's what it was for Paul, and he's not ashamed. And he's going to proclaim that, knowing that not everyone gets it. But he thinks it's really important for people to know that the only thing making God's love inaccessible to them is the walls that we build up. That's how I interpret Paul's righteousness through faith. And I think it's true. And I think it matters. And that's why I'm a Christian, because despite all we say, myself included, it's my experience that many of us, most of us even, I can think of only one exception to this that I've ever met in my life. I think deep down, we don't believe that we're lovable or of value or made in God's image or whatever word we want to use, whatever language we want to describe that with. And that's the big wall blocking us from salvation, whatever salvation means. And for me, there's something about the life of Jesus, the historical person, and something about Christ, the incarnate presence of God, that helps me break down those walls. And that's life work. I just found one of those walls fairly recently that I'd never named before, and it was quite a wonderful experience grounded in tremendous difficulty and tremendous self-doubt, and now I know it's there, and I can name it. But it's not gone yet. Maybe it's never gone, but this life work, well, that changes how I feel about myself. And it changes how I interact and have relationships with everyone around me and with the whole of creation. What we need to do is answer the question, does our faith matter? Not just to ourselves, but to others around us. If it doesn't, then what are we even doing here? But if it does, well, then we need to share it. We live in a world that I think needs faith. Not in the otherwise people won't go to heaven way. And it goes beyond simply we have good preaching or good music or look at all the social outreach being done out of this building. I mean, that's good, but that stuff can be done anywhere. Why do people come here specifically? People need to be a part of something bigger than themselves. People need to trust that there is an essence beneath all things that binds us together. People need meaning. People need compassion. People need justice. And people need to know that they are beloved. These are fundamental needs that people have, and the world often seems without them. This is the heart of what the church can offer. So I ask again, why is it specifically important to be Christian? Not that the whole world needs to be. I don't believe that. People who have heard me preach before know that I don't believe that. But it is important for you because you're here. So why? Paul provides the template to true evangelism, not one based on fear, but it's one grounded in love and care and a desire to heal. And so his process for evangelism is first figure out why is it important to be Christian? And then second, don't be ashamed of it. Thanks be to God. Amen.